Everybody, it's Critical. I'm playing Gobblestopler Simulator 2009, otherwise known as Forklift Truck Simulator 2009. So let's get right into the game. I've completed the
So,
tutorial. This is
Maria, this is a forklift simulator game.
I guess the world is overrun with boxes and pipes, and it's up to me to stop the infestation.
It's like a video of like people playing, you know, people post on YouTube like videos of themselves playing games and then other people like love to watch.
Yeah. I don't understand why, but yes.
Yeah, it's like a whole thing. I don't get it either. But like this video has 700,000 views and it's just like this dude talking and
What?
like driving a forklift around and trying to pick stuff up and like put it other places.
Yeah.
But what I think is funny too, and I want to show you, is like if you look at the comments. So people are like giving tips. They're like, I drive a forklift and they don't go super fast, but it feels like they do when you're in close quarters and warehouses, maybe 35 to 40 miles per hour. Someone else is like, keep your forks low to the ground when traveling, like under 6 inches high, prevents loads from tumbling off the forks. I'm a forklift driver.
Oh my God.
So you have all these people like commenting who like actually
drive forklifts.
Drive forklifts. And the reason I ended up watching this weird YouTube video is that I've been spending a lot of time doing research on the future of jobs and the economy.
Okay.
And in fact, I found out that a lot of our future jobs involve forklifts. And that's because one of the fastest growing industries in our country today is the industry of moving and storing stuff, especially stuff that we order online.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today, Warehouse World. The warehouse industry is an almost invisible part of the supply chain, but we've all participated in it with just a few clicks online. Warehouses are the in-between space that all of this stuff, from cat food to fuzzy socks, flows through on the way to us, and the industry is exploding.
Hello, Chattanooga!
In 2013, then-President Obama visited an Amazon warehouse in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and he gave a speech about the future of jobs in America, with a particular focus on getting a better bargain for the middle class.
We've been fighting our way back from the worst recession since the Great Depression, and it cost millions of Americans their jobs and their homes and their savings. And part of what it did was it laid bare the long-term erosion that's been happening when it comes to middle-class security.
Obama talked about bringing back manufacturing jobs, but he was also there in Chattanooga to highlight job growth in other sectors. Amazon had just announced that it was hiring thousands of workers for its warehouses nationwide. Now, over the next 2 years, experts are saying that the warehousing industry needs to hire over 400,000 workers just to keep up with the growth in e-commerce. So the jobs of tomorrow are actually warehouse work. And many of those jobs will be held by Latinos and Latinas. Currently, about 40% of 18 to 34-year-olds working in the warehousing business are Latinos. But are these jobs that are taking over, are they really good jobs? I mean, are they really a path to a stable middle-class life the way that manufacturing jobs once were? Latino USA producer Sofia Paliza Carr is going to explore the world of warehouses, and she's going to take us inside a high school that sees this booming industry as an opportunity for its students.
Patterson is this place in the California Central Valley. It's almost close enough to be like a satellite suburb of San Francisco. It's about an hour and a half away. All around it are fields, orchards. And it's known as the apricot capital of the world. In the 70s, 40% of the nation's apricots were grown right here. But today, as you drive into town from the elevated highway, you'll see something different. You'll see these vast, seemingly unending, low and flat buildings, warehouses. There's a warehouse for Kohl's, for CVS, for Restoration Hardware, and for Amazon. They've all been built in the last 12 years, literally built on land that used to be orchards. And one of the local high schools, Patterson High School, has taken notice. They spent $2.5 million to build a 10,000 square foot mock warehouse on school campus. And inside, they've got conveyor belts and aisles of shelves and virtual reality forklifts. All of this to help teach high school students what it's like to work in a real warehouse, like those right out by the highway. On top of taking English or algebra or photography classes, students at Patterson can take Introduction to Logistics and Forklift Driving. The warehouse is fully stocked. It's got a robotic arm that's 1/10 the scale of a real one, and students can learn how to program it to pick up and put down pallets of stuff. There's a bunch of real forklifts and machines out back. But before students can drive those, they have to learn on the virtual reality forklifts.
Straight up. Don't push forward.
There you go. Hilario Garcia teaches the forklift classes.
Turn your steering wheel the other way. Nope, the other way. Washa, míralo.
He goes by Larry. And for a guy that spends a lot of time talking about workplace safety, he's real jokey.
The fall's not going to hurt you. It's the landing that's going to hurt.
Larry's got a gray goatee and transition lenses. He's been working in warehouses for 25 years.
This is the last thing I ever dreamed about doing was being a teacher. That's the last thing I'd ever dreamed I would be.
The virtual reality forklifts that he has students on today, they look like car racing games that you'd see at an arcade. There's a driver's chair and controls.
Bart, you logging in?
Yeah.
Okay. And then Jackie, you're going...
16-year-old Jacqueline Mendoza is in Larry's class. She sits in one of the chairs and puts on the visor.
It tells me to turn on the key, and you see, as you can see, the key is highlighted. And you turn it, and start the engine.
The headset makes it totally immersive, and there are speakers right by your ears that get across all the rumblings and the beeps. And the program brings up different challenges. It sets up cones for you to drive around, and at a certain point, digital people start walking around. Distractions.
People just show up on your...
Yeah, they're walking like side to side, yeah, for you to get like comfortable with people walking around you, because in the warehouse, there's people walking around.
What happens if you hit one of the people?
Oh, yeah. You fail.
Jackie heard about this class from a former student and decided it sounded like a good job opportunity. A few students I talked to had actually heard about this class word of mouth, and many of them were expecting good jobs after graduation. Patterson High School is about 70% Latino, and it's a pretty low-income community. 75% of Patterson students are on reduced and free lunch. So a warehouse job that pays $11 to maybe $16 an hour right after graduation, that's attractive. It's much better than working in fast food. As he shows me around, Larry insists that I try out the order picker machine. It's like a lift designed to help you reach the highest shelves in a warehouse.
Okay. Don't put your foot down. Let it go up.
Okay.
Got to bring you down. That's the only one you got to worry about.
He harnesses me in and sends me up. Just a casual 3 stories high.
Does it keep going?
More? All the kids down below were laughing at me. Larry thinks all these machines, all this training, it's definitely worth it for Patterson students.
The jobs that are needed right now in this industry is going to blow up by 2020.
Nationally, the warehousing industry is projected to employ nearly 4.8 million people by 2024. And there are even more distribution centers planned for Patterson. Larry grew up in Merced, a town nearby. And as a young man growing up in the 80s, one day he got a phone call from a large printing warehouse in the area.
I graduated from high school. They said, hey, thank you very much. So I remember him calling me that day. It was just stuck. And asked me, hey, Larry, I got a job for you. If you know. I said, no, I'm cool. And he says, no, I got a full-time job, benefits and everything. Mom's looking at me like, yeah, you better take it.
He started immediately on the night shift. And he still dreams about that job.
I have nightmares of paper.
Like what kind? Nightmares, like they're falling.
Oh, yeah, paper falling on you. And then when you worked in the baler room, all the waste paper comes to the baler room. So I always felt about, always had a nightmare about falling in the compactor.
Warehouses are booming now, but of course, it's not a brand new industry. When World War II broke out, Americans needed to quickly move goods overseas, and they needed a warehouse system to do it. Then the private industry followed, helped by the development of the highway system. Think about how hard it was to maintain inventory and move millions of things across the country, all without a computer.
When I started back in the 80s, it was crazy. It was all paperwork, and you were pushing a pencil on pretty much everything. As to now, these days, it's more computer-based. Everything's electronic. Technology's advanced. tremendously. It would take me 45 minutes to unload a truck and get ready to put it away, whereas now it'd probably take you about 15 minutes to do it.
So while the industry used to be all about storing stuff, now it's all about fulfilling online orders and replacing traditional retail. The school's hope is that after graduation, these kids get jobs in the industry. And some of them actually have, like Manny Olivares. He graduated from Patterson High School in 2018. I meet him really early in the morning, right before his shift at a warehouse for Crate and Barrel. He's chilling in his car, a Chrysler 300 with tinted windows.
Thank you.
What year is this?
2016. I did the headlights. I did modifications on the engine.
He's trying to wake up still, eating an English muffin.
I always keep it chill in the morning. Because if I eat too much, my stomach starts to hurt, so I have to stop working. Yeah.
Manny is 18. He's got a really sweet face and smile, braces, and a tattoo of his last name, Olivares, across his forearm. His shift starts at 7 a.m. Once he clocks in, he stretches and hears from his boss how many items he moved yesterday and how many he'll need to get today.
The only gear I bring is just a box cutter. I bring a pen with me, and that's pretty much it. Oh, and gloves. Dust collects all the way at the very top of the racks. When I'm picking items, I'll just like lean over or something, and then my whole arm's black. So
before the Patterson warehouse program, Manny thought that he'd probably end up doing the kind of work other people in his family did, like construction.
It was basically like a guide that I have to follow. If not, that would have been there or the fields, basically.
Like a lot of kids around here, Manny worked picking peaches when he was younger, and he knew he never wanted to do that again.
To work inside so much better than outside. Warehouses just look like big blocks. But then when you actually get inside, you're like, oh man, like this is pretty big. You know, it has a lot of things, a lot of machines, a lot of people.
Manny's really proud of his job. He's a picker. He picked fruit when he was young, but now the things that he picks are items like couches, lamps, end tables, which he pulls off shelves so they can be delivered. He uses an order picker, basically a much bigger version of the lift that I went up on, to reach the highest shelves in the warehouse, 6 stories tall. At 6:58 a.m., it's time for Manny to start his shift. Manny is doing exactly what Patterson's warehouse program hoped to set him up for. He got a good full-time job in a warehouse right after graduation. But it turns out a full-time job in a warehouse isn't always a given. And the future of these jobs may actually be kind of precarious.
Coming up, we visit a high-tech Amazon warehouse and meet a few of our future robot overlords. Stay with us. No te vayas.
I'm Felix Contreras. This week on Alt Latino, El Tiny. We're going to dig into the Tiny Desk concert archives and play some of the Latin music artists who have stood behind Bob Boylan's desk and serenaded us. Don't miss El Tiny on the next Alt Latino. Check it out.
We're back. And before the break, we heard from high school students who were learning to drive forklifts and how to organize inventory in order to prepare them for working in warehouses. Now, our producer, Sofia Paliza Carr, is taking us to a real warehouse where these young people might work one day.
If you remember, Patterson, California has all of these warehouses over by the highway, and it's a perfect place for them. It's empty, flat, and just a quick hour and a half to San Francisco. One of those warehouses is Amazon's. I reached out to them to see if I could come take a look around, and they said yes. And visiting the facility gave me a sense of what the future of warehousing will actually look like as e-commerce grows, especially when it comes to increased automation. As I enter the building, there's just this wall of turnstiles, floor to ceiling, the kind that you see in the New York City subway. And there are signs everywhere that say no photos. Once a guard lets me in, I realize it's break time. Tons of employees are streaming out through the airport security-style scanners that they have.
This fulfillment center is just under 1 million square feet. We also employ more than 800 full-time associates.
I get a tour of the facility from Danny Tafoya, who introduced herself as a community specialist. I'm not sure what that means. In fact, there's a lot of Amazon-specific language I hear on my tour. Amazon calls their warehouses fulfillment centers. They call all their workers associates. Entry-level jobs are known as Tier 1. And over again, I keep hearing the phrase, fulfilling our customer promise.
To fulfill our customer promise.
Walking around, there are stop signs in a lot of places and lines on the ground, like roads, which is good because...
I'm just going to stop you for the crosswalk real quick. And we're good to cross. Machines that actually drove past us. I'm hoping we'll see another one in a minute. We call them AGVs.
AGVs. Automatic Guided Vehicles. Basically, it's like a forklift loaded up with items, but it's totally unmanned, and it follows a map of the warehouse floor programmed into it. It just whooshes by us. No problem. Everything in this warehouse is yellow and gray, except for another kind of robot that works here. They're bright orange.
When you think of robots, this isn't always what people have in mind.
This is Lauren Lynch, who does communications for Amazon. They're not person-shaped robots, more like big orange Roombas. They're squarish, and on top of each of them is a set of shelves, which holds items.
Operate in this perfect choreographed concert of efficiency.
So this is how it works. Say somebody really wants to order a back massager. They click it online. Once they do that, that's when the item gets picked.
You're going to notice on the screen, the associate is provided a picture of the item, a description of the item, and then a quantity of how many they need to pick.
To pick the back massager, a second worker calls the orange robots over, retrieves the massager from a shelf, and then puts it on a yellow tray. Kind of like those airport security trays, which go on a conveyor belt.
So the next step in the process is pack. So the next place that we're going to go is to a pack station.
So at the pack station, it's what it sounds like. Basically, the back massager comes in on a yellow tray, and a worker packs it into a box. No robots here. This is the place where someone gets to see all the secrets of what we order online. And today that someone is a very peppy Ashley Vasconcelos.
So what do you have there?
This is a candy cotton machine.
Okay.
Which is awesome, you know?
Do you have time to like look at the stuff that you're actually packing?
Sometimes it's like window shopping. I get to look and then I get to go home and buy.
I want to know, what is the weirdest combo of stuff she's seen someone order?
You know, one time I got a microwave and some duct tape and a hammer. And that was interesting. Interesting combination.
I wonder what's going to happen next.
Yes. What are they going to do? Warm up the tape? Or
I ask her, how many items does she have to pack a day?
Well, I know an hour they want us to do about a 63. So that's how many we do an hour here. And so you could do that. We work 10 hours a day.
Workers normally do 4 shifts a week. So if you do the math, Ashley packs around 2,520 items a week. So the very last thing that happens to your back massager is that it gets a shipping label. All of the labor at this point is done by a magical puff of air.
A shipping label is created and gently placed with a puff of air on top of the box. That sound that you hear is a puff of air that is placing it onto the shipping box.
This part, I have to admit, is literally my favorite. So the robots at Amazon, pretty amazing. And on the way in, I pass signs of a mother's room, and there are vending machines that I see too. They're free to workers with items like earplugs, lotion, Advil. Just this week, Amazon announced that they're raising their minimum hourly wage to $15. But over the last few years, Amazon has been grilled about their working conditions. For example, public records show that thousands of Amazon employees are on food stamps. Amazon says these figures are misleading because they include people who only worked there for a short period of time or worked part-time. In 2011, Amazon made headlines when they forced workers in a Pennsylvania warehouse to continue working in over 100-degree weather, sometimes to the point of collapse. Since then, Amazon says they've changed their policy to allow workers to go home when heat is excessive. and a book published this year by a reporter who worked undercover at an Amazon facility in the UK details that workers often wouldn't even take bathroom breaks because they feared not making work quotas, and that workers were actually penalized for taking sick days. Amazon responded that they didn't recognize these allegations as accurate. They also said they coach people who aren't making the quotas and that their attendance policy has changed. These kinds of conditions are part of why employee turnover at Amazon is very high. While I'm at Amazon, I ask Lauren about this.
You know, we don't have power over why individuals make the decisions they make to stay in a career or a role for whatever period of time they choose to. What we are able to do is provide a great workplace with great team members and great benefits.
A consequence of so many workers turning in and out of warehouses is that it's really hard for them to push for their rights if they have concerns. There are no unionized Amazon warehouses in the United States.
Amazon primarily believes in an open door policy. We believe in the ability to talk directly with associates.
Open door policy, basically, she's saying that they'd rather have employees talk to their managers if they have a problem than work with the union to voice concerns. So, without strong worker protections and in an ever-shifting workforce, are these the jobs that the graduates of Patterson High School really want? I head down to Los Angeles, to a place reckoning with these questions. The Warehouse Workers Resource Center is located in Long Beach. On one side of the room is a wall of photos of workers protesting. On the other side, coffee. The center is one of the only organizations in the country that advocates for warehouse workers. They train people on things like wage theft and how to file for workers' comp for injuries. At the warehouse center, the day I visit is Dwayne Wilson. He's 25, and he drives forklifts for local warehouses.
I like working in a warehouse, but it's not a job that I, you know, pictured myself as a child, like, going into.
Dwayne's been working in warehouses for the last 7 years, after he dropped out of college to start helping his family. His mom got sick, and he helped out paying rent and the bills.
And the easiest place to get a job is in a warehouse, so.
The biggest problem for him, though, is the lack of consistent hours. See, Dwayne doesn't work directly for the warehouse. He works for a temp agency. And the agency is supposed to have him working at the warehouse 40 hours a week, but
sometimes they don't let me in. Sometimes they do. Last week, they only let me in one day, so.
Dwayne sometimes lines up at 5 a.m. in the morning for a shift at 6 a.m. after being called in and still gets turned away. Sometimes he'll only work one full week a month. Dwayne shows me his phone.
He texted me Friday because I asked him if there was work.
Okay, so you're texting your manager, you say work tomorrow, and he says, not tomorrow. And you say, can I at least work Friday? Like, can you stick me anywhere? And he says, message me Thursday night to see if I have an opening. And then on Thursday, you text and say, work tomorrow, and he says, no.
Yeah, but somehow
so it's like it's like a constant text thread of that, basically.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
And as for moving up and getting off the temp hamster wheel, Dwayne says he's never even seen a way to apply directly for a full-time job at the warehouse that he works at. Basically, warehousing companies use temp agencies because it's cheaper. Temp agencies provide a steady stream of labor to warehouses that don't have to worry about recruiting workers or managing them. They take money out of each worker's hourly wage. And Dwayne says his temp agency doesn't tell them how much. It could be a dollar or $10. They don't know. And the lack of work or a steady paycheck makes workers less likely to speak up because they don't want to risk sacrificing the hours they do have. In Dwayne's case, he says he'd like to go back to school, maybe become a writer. But that's not in his plan right now.
I kind of miss going to school. I feel like the things that they had us do, I wish I didn't complain about because it doesn't seem so hard or so difficult anymore.
Temp work in all sectors is one of the fastest growing industries in the economy. It's hard to know exactly how many warehouse workers are temps, but we do know that companies like Amazon temporarily hire hundreds of thousands of seasonal workers for the holiday rush every year. And these are the trends that Celine Perez has been watching since the 90s. She's the co-executive director of the Worker Center, where I meet Dwayne. She says companies seek communities that will work for a low wage.
I do think in terms of where warehouses are being constructed, we do see it's in areas where folks consider there's a lot of cheap labor.
But ultimately, Celine does see potential for making warehouse jobs real middle-class jobs if people just organized for better worker protections. because it's happened before.
In the United States, everyone tries to talk about the heyday of manufacturing jobs and we had to bring manufacturing back, which I think it's not realistic. But it's also remembering, because folks say those were great jobs, they weren't initially. There was a long fight. So I believe the same thing for warehouses. They're not going away. We're seeing an increase of e-commerce. They're not great jobs, but we need to make them great jobs.
When we say a great job, we generally mean a middle-class job. These days, a middle-class job really varies in definition. In California, last year, a middle-class income was considered anywhere between $45,000 a year to $135,000 a year. A professor at USC, Juan de Lara, found that because of the industry's frequent use of temp agencies and third-party suppliers, warehouse jobs only offer up on average $22,000 a year, $19,000 if you're a woman. Back at Patterson High School, the teachers tell me that they don't necessarily see a warehouse job as an end goal for their students. They want them to get promoted or use this job to help them pay for college. Larry, the forklift teacher at Patterson High School, tells me that his goal is to definitely keep students away from temp jobs.
They will start as an entry-level position, but their progression as to get further and higher up in the industry will move that much faster. As far as temp and full-time, we're trying to get them in as full-time, permanent full-time with benefits from the get-go.
But there's only so much he can control, or anyone can, over an industry that has a somewhat disposable workforce. Even Larry, he spent over 20 years in the industry doing every job there is to do, only to be unceremoniously pushed out.
In my experience, my personal experience, I was just a number. 21 years after I was in my one company that I was working with, they basically gave me an offer, either go to a permanent night shift or take a severance package. So I took the severance package and I went somewhere else.
So I ask him, is he worried then about teaching kids to do a job where workers are maybe just a number on a budget line, regardless of their skills?
But you also had the skills too, right? Like you had been in the industry for like 20
yes.
years and that didn't protect you.
It didn't protect me, but you know, I can at least pass on some of those skills to more students to give them the opportunity to walk into a job that's gonna be paying them something, even though they may end up being a temp.
After his shift ends at Crate and Barrel, I meet up with Manny again, the former Patterson student who I interviewed in his car. He's a little tired.
How was work today?
Stressful. Every day, yeah. A lot to take in.
Every day when he gets home, he has to recharge quickly and then get ready for night school. He's working full-time right now and going to class 4 nights a week. His dream is to one day go to college, to Cal Poly specifically.
It's just a famous engineering school. It's the top one here in California. So I want to be like a civil engineer.
He wants to buy a house one day, a two-story house.
Or even a nice one-story. Yeah. But I want to live like on a ranch, like really not too isolated, but having a good plot of land. Hopefully have a boat.
Manny's job as a warehouse picker has been good for him, for now. But it's just a stepping stone, a hustle. It's not going to provide the future he sees for himself.
Thanks, Sophia, for that story. This segment was reported using research conducted for Latino USA by the Community Service Society of New York. You can find out more information about these trends at cssny.org/LatinoUSA. This episode was reported and produced by Sofia Paliza Carr and edited by Marlon Bishop. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Antonia Cerejido, Maggie Freeling, Janice Yamoka, and Sayer Quevedo, with help from Fernanda Chavarri and Maya Cueva. Our engineer is Stephanie LeBeau. Additional engineering this week by Rebecca Wyman and Doug Shugart at WGBH Studios in Boston. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholtz. Our fellows are Virginia Lora and Jesse Alejandro Cottrell. Our interns are Paula Moura and Comis Johnson. fact-checking this week by Julissa Treviño. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. And if you like the music that you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Hasta la próxima. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by Deutsche Bank America's Foundation. The Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. And by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA. 9 years ago, the De La Rosa family was divided by immigration law. Now, the U.S. government is giving them 30 days to be together, to say a final goodbye to a dying husband and father.
Even though it's annoying when she wakes me up because I'm so tired, it's fun to wake up to her. It's nice.
That's next time on Latino USA.
How often do people lie on dating apps? And are robots taking over our jobs? I'm Cardiff Garcia, co-host of Planet Money's The Indicator, where every day we tell you a short story about the economy. Get it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.